Με λένε Penny, είμαι από τους Δελφούς και ταξιδεύω με τον Rick Steves. That was Greek. I'm Penny, from Delphi, Greece, and I'm traveling with Rick Steves. Με λένε Penny, είμαι από τους Δελφούς και ταξιδεύω με τον Rick Steves.
Perhaps the goddess Athena had something to do with it. In her 30s, early into her long tenure as a copy editor at the New Yorker magazine, Mary Norris's boss showed her the delight you can find in learning to read and speak Greek. For one thing, it's like a ticket that lets you access both the ancient and the modern Greek world, and it adds a whole new level to your travels in Greece. You could call Mary an alphabetophile as she learns the root meanings of words we use in everyday English and listens to what the characters of Greek mythology have to say to us today. Mary describes what fuels her passion for all things Greek in her book, Greek to Me, Adventures of the Comma Queen. Mary, thanks for being here.
It's wonderful to be with you, Rick.
So you wrote, and I'm just quoting here from your book. I want to read this couple of sentences. It's an amazing entry. Greek has been my salvation. Whenever I've been away from Greek for a while and I come back to it, it revives something in me. It gives me an erotic thrill, as if every verb and noun had some visceral connection to what it stands for. Wow, I think I'll have a little of what you're having. That is quite a statement, Mary. So what is it about Greek that gives you an erotic thrill? Like every little comma, every little accent has something exciting behind it.
Well, it is a very sexy language. I'm not sure quite how to account for it. But you know, the overtones of Greek in the English language give you a little bit of an idea. Every word that has come from Greek to English has this aura around it that is hard to explain. The word panorama comes from the Greek. Pan is all, and orama means vision. So a panorama is a vision all around. And there are just countless words that if you know where they came from and you have an idea of their Greek roots, like the name Pandora, You know, of Pandora of the box. Her name means all gifts.
Okay, here's a word, monotony.
I hope you're not addressing my tones, voice.
I'm talking about Greek to me, but what does that mean, monotony, if you look
monotony
right
into Greek? Monotony is one or single, alone. And tono is from it means tone,
so
just as it does
one
in
tone,
English.
So monotone.
Monotony is single tone.
It's kind of onomatopoetic.
Monotony.
So it is kind of confusing because we think of Greek in a way as ancient, but it's modern also, of course. How is Greek the same or different from ancient Greek, today's Greek and ancient Greek?
Well, modern Greek looks a lot like ancient Greek. They've dropped a lot of the accents over the words, and it's pronounced differently. Although I have to say, they don't really know how the ancient Greek was pronounced. But a lot of the vowels and the diphthongs or clusters have slid into the single sound of E. And The meanings of the words have all shifted. The spelling still has its history in it, just the way so many words in English do.
As a Grecophile, is that what you would call somebody like you who just loves everything
about
Greece?
That's a good word for it, or Philhellene.
Philhellene, I like that. So are you more excited about contemporary Greek or ancient Greek?
Well, I love them both. If I had to choose, I'd go with modern Greek because it's the Greeks now who are still alive and who have feelings. The ancient Greek has an amazing treasure of literature that is written in it, though, so you have to give them credit.
And speaking of giving credit, a lot of colleges are no longer even teaching the classics anymore. What's the trajectory of studying ancient Greece and the classics in higher education in our culture?
Well, you have to be pretty dogged to insist on studying modern or ancient Greek, I think. It started when I was in high school. The requirement for Latin started to not exist anymore. Nobody cared anymore about Latin, much less Greek.
But I took a class way, way back when I was in university called Ancient Greek and Latin Roots in Modern Usage. And it was a great class.
Ooh, that sounds wonderful.
It was really good. And I never learned a language, but I sure benefited from knowing, getting an appreciation of how deeply rooted our modern language is in Ancient Greek and Latin. Our guest on Travel with Rick Steves is Mary Norris. She describes her passionate love affair with Greek language and culture in her book. It's called Greek to Me. Mary's also written Between You and Me, in which she provides irreverent tales of pencils and punctuation from her career as a well-known copy editor at The New Yorker. Her website is commaqueen.net. So, Mary, the Greek language is one thing, but there's also just the whole study of Greek classics, and that would be tied intimately in with Greek mythology. How is Greek mythology a life skill worth having? How has that been actually of practical value in your life?
Well, what the Greek gods are, really, are aspects of the human spirit and the human and human life, the human mind. For instance, Dionysus. If you have an extra large dose of Dionysus, you'll get drunk all the time. If you feel something like Zeus, maybe you'll have lots of affairs. My favorite is Athena, the goddess of wisdom, because she offered a model of feminine strength and wisdom and learning, and also was a friend to humanity. You know, she was the guide for Odysseus. So she was a kind of counselor or mentor. And, you know, it really helps people to have somebody to get advice from. So if you find someone with bright eyes who has some ideas for you or some suggestions for how you might get something done, you know, listen.
Now, you wrote quite emotionally or impactfully about how taking a course in Greek mythology actually helped you deal with a family tragedy.
Yes, when I was growing up, when I was just a baby, I had a brother who was 2 years older than I, and he tragically died. And my mother, of course, was grief-stricken, and my parents had another baby right away. And I felt guilty about my brother's death growing up, and also resentful of the new brother. And it was not until I was in college and I studied mythology. I had a course with a wonderful classicist named Froma Zeitlin, and one lecture she spent on the mysteries of Eleusina, the Eleusinian mysteries. And that is the story of Demeter, the goddess of grain and cereal, and her daughter Persephone. And Persephone gets raped by Hades and taken to the underworld. And her mother is heartbroken and won't let anything grow. So humanity is on the verge of famine before Zeus makes Hades give the girl up again. So Hades gives the girl up, but he makes her take a bite of the seeds of a pomegranate first. And for that reason, she must return to the underworld every year. And that story explains the round of the seasons, you know, spring, summer, fall, winter, and Persephone, or spring, comes back every year. And we need that reassurance. In my case, personally, you know, I went and traveled to Eleusina, as the modern city of Eleusis is called. And there was not all that much there to look at, but it gave me the sense that what I had missed as a child was this affection between a mother and a daughter. And I finally came to terms with my mother's grief and that it was not my fault, you know, and I forgave my mother and got to be better friends with my little brother and just felt better for that experience.
So Greek myths can be part of, interwoven into the Greek upbringing, the Greek sensibilities, the Greek way of dealing with life's challenges. I suppose in ancient times, that was a practical function of all of these myths.
Well, the tragedies were like ancient therapy. You know, that's when people didn't have shrinks to go to, but they all went together to the theaters and to watch Oedipus go through what he goes through, or Antigone. Their problems were so much worse than anything that happens to us that it makes you feel better. It just does.
And you write in your book, in a fascinating way, how you can gain insights into contemporary Greek culture by looking at the myths. For example, sweeping, the action of taking a broom and sweeping, in ancient myths was almost like foreplay leading up to some sort of exciting adventure with somebody. sexually.
And did I write that? Goodness.
Yeah, maybe I'm drawing a conclusion, but you drew a connection with today, how brooms are a big deal in Greek culture. And I've been to Greece a lot, and I've never noticed that.
Well, you watch next time. I think it's because they have so many ruins, and the ruins create so much dust that the Greeks are always sweeping, whether it's a handmade broom or something plastic that they got at the supermarket. Speaking of supermarkets, they have a whole aisle dedicated to brooms. The word is skopa, like scoop.
And you wrote how a rainstorm is just a good opportunity to really get out and clean the sidewalks.
Well, I did have a Greek landlady who was very, very, very neat and kept every speck of dirt off her sidewalk. And when it rained, she would actually use that rain to scrub them extra well.
But the fact that that was recognized as a Greek trait, even woven into myths that were concocted 2,500 years ago, that's quite astounding. That's quite an insight into that culture.
Well, you remember Ajax and Hercules? I guess they say Heracles. Actually, in Greek, the heroes were always cleaning up. You know, maybe in war they were cleaning up by killing.
Right. Yeah.
But certainly all half of those labors of Heracles were about, you know, cleaning the Augean stables and getting rid of messes.
This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with Mary Norris. Her book is Greek to Me, Adventures of the Comma Queen. Mary, you've traveled around Greece a lot, and it shows in this book. I'd love to know, just from a traveler's point of view, what are some of your favorite ancient sites, and how has understanding the myths been a good sort of prep so you get the most out of your visits?
Well, certainly Athens and the Acropolis and all the temples up there, including the Parthenon, the temple to Athena, are very inspiring, although you kind of have to imagine what it looked like in ancient days. The new Acropolis Museum really helps with that. It has everything on levels so that you can climb the stairs and look at the sculpture at the level it would have been on the Parthenon itself. And they have dotted lines for where the pieces that were taken by Lord Elgin to England should be. So that's very interesting. And then everyone has to go to the islands. My favorite was probably Cyprus, which actually is not part of Greece, but the Greek culture there is very strong. And it was devoted to Aphrodite. That's where they say Aphrodite was born. And the place is just gorgeous. It's just so beautiful and beautifully kept. It's well groomed. And I know there's still a war going on there. And when you get there, you can see why they're fighting over it. You know, of course, it's in a very strategic position, but it's also a beautiful, beautiful place.
Hmm. Now, have you traveled on the Peloponnesian Peninsula a lot? What were your favorite parts
of
the Peloponnese?
I love the Peloponnese. Everywhere you go on the Peloponnese, you see sites that are associated with Heracles. You see places that are mentioned, of course, in the Trojan War, both the Iliad and the Odyssey, the home of Agamemnon in Mycenae, and Pylos, Sandy Pylos, or Pylos, where Nestor was from. My favorite place is always the most recent place I visited, and in this case, that's Kardemili, which is in the Mani, the central peninsula of the three that hang down from the Peloponnese.
So that's way on the far south, as far as you can go on the
Yes, it is as far south of the Greek mainland, yes. Mm-hmm. The nearest big town is Kalamata, where the olives come from.
Mm-hmm. But Kardemili, you can feel the heritage of classical Greece in a place like Kardemili, I think.
Yes. You've been there then? Yes.
Oh yes. And it's a wonderful jumping off point for the Mani. And the Mani is depopulated today, but you go to the very end of the road in Mani, and it's, according to mythology, that was the entrance to the underworld.
Yes, way down there at the end. And that, of course, is such a treacherous road to drive on, but so rewarding, so beautiful.
So if you think about your passion for Greek culture, you know the intimate ins and outs of the language, you have incorporated that into your travels, you've written about it. How would you say your love of all things Greece has enriched your life?
Well, when I first started studying it back in the 80s, I was in my 30s, and I was kind of lonely. And Actually, Greek, both modern Greek and ancient Greek, gave me a social life. I know, it sounds crazy, doesn't it? But when I was studying ancient Greek, I got involved in productions of plays, the Greek tragedies in the original language. And I loved doing that, and I made a lot of friends doing that, you know, the way when you're in a play, you become part of a family in a way. And then traveling in Greece itself, I've found many people who are just really open. And you know, my Greek is not very good. I hate to admit it, but I have to. And I make a lot of mistakes, and they're so generous. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they correct me when I'm wrong, and they laugh at my mistakes, and they teach me.
Considering all the potential fun you could have with Greeks in your travels and how omnipresent the tavernas are, what's your tip for an American that really is not fluent in Greek to be able to connect with the people and have fun in a taverna?
Well, I don't think you can go wrong in a taverna. I would say that you should try to eat the way Greeks eat, which is family style. Start with an ouzo, with a little ice and some water and a little feta cheese and some olives, and have some of the dips, tarmosalata, which is fish egg roe, and I know some people are scared of it, but it's just delicious, and tzatziki, which is the yogurt dill cucumber dip that's so good, and then move on to any of the bigger dishes. A Greek salad, koriatiki salata, is a wonderful thing with feta cheese and olives. They do great things with chicken. I'm not a big fan of lamb, but the Greeks also do well with lamb. And the seafood is very fresh. Everything is flavored with just four things, really. Olive oil, lemon, garlic, and oregano. And those four things are the essence of Greek cooking to me.
Oh, and you have that surrounded by the wonders of Greece, beautiful Greek salad, about six or eight little plates, meze. Fresh seafood right out of the sea. One too many ouzos.
And some local wine.
And the clatter of the backgammon boards all around you. And all of a sudden, dancing breaks out, and you have a memory that you will never forget.
And all the sea glittering.
And when you know Greek culture and enjoy Greek culture like you, I would think locals would be impressed, almost stunned by your knowledge.
Locals always appreciate it when a traveler, a barbarian, as the Greeks call anyone who doesn't speak Greek, has gone to the trouble to learn a little bit of their language. They appreciate it. Many of them speak English now, so there isn't such a need to learn any Greek, but they still really appreciate it, and it's very rewarding.
Mary Norris, thank you so much for sharing with us a little insight into the value of knowing and understanding Greek language and Greek culture. The book is Greek to Me, Adventures of the Comma Queen. Thanks, Mary. And how do you say happy travels in Greek?
Kalo taxidi.
Well, then, kalo taxidi.
Kalo.
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 Boy, this taxidi. Is difficult for me. Opa.
Opa, that's easy.
That's easy. Okay, thanks a lot.
Travel with Rick Steves is produced at Rick Steves Europe in Edmonds, Washington by Tim Tatton, Kazmira Hall, and Donna Bardsley. Affiliate relations are by Sheila Gerzoff. Our theme music was written and performed by Jerry Frank. You can find links to our guests and search the show archives at ricksteves.com/radio. We'll see you next week with more Travel with Rick Steves.